Today's proposals for some of the council states in the 1950s. Because you did have a lot of open space in the same way as Keynes has. Okay, the second one is the second and infilling. When we look at particularly rural settlements, villages, sometimes small towns, hamlets, there's a lot of pressure for new housing, and the obvious space that seems to be, can conceive to be the obvious place for new housing, is in the gaps within existing places. It's not really changing the footprint of the settlement, therefore it seems like it's a non-destructive option. But doing this sort of thing can change the character of the places that are being lived in, and they can also change the way that they can damage existing archaeology. We don't always know what's in these spaces. Often these open spaces within existing settlements are spaces previously inhabited, then ceased to be inhabited as a result of perhaps the population decline after that death, and then didn't become repopulated as the settlement population picked up. So infilling is something we need to be aware of. It's very important to communities. Communities often don't like the idea of the open spaces within their villages being built on, that are often a high priority for planning. The third thing I want to mention is the idea of transient mobile populations. More and more today in our existing communities of all sizes, in fact, but right out into the countryside as well as in the towns and cities, people move around much more than they used to. A couple of generations ago, people might well grow up and spend most of their lives living in the same community. People move around a lot more work or for other reasons. And this has a number of implications that we need to think about. We're thinking about to connect communities and planning and people of the past for the present and the future. Because one might assume that people who only recently moved somewhere have no connection to this history, no interest in this history. And sometimes that's the case. But in other instances, people newly moving into a place are very committed to it, interested in it, enthusiastic about it, see it in new ways. And can be quite a great opportunity to get engaged in investigating the past of that community. And that brings me on to the fourth theme that I wanted to bring to this workshop, is that idea of connected communities with the past. And at one level, there's a very practical impact of the need for broadband connections, better broadband connections in places, and there's lots of digging being done. This is a destructive process that needs to be monitored, but it's also a creative process in that the opportunity that gives for excavation certainly provides archaeological evidence. But also beyond that, within connected communities, increasingly in the UK, the Heritage Lottery Fund, community archaeology projects are becoming more and more widespread. And the more people get experience of community archaeology and doing some digging or some archaeological survey investigation, field walking in their environment, the more enthusiastic they get for it. And then neighbouring communities will appear. And I find this extensively working in Eastern England. The idea to take part in some archaeology spreads into one village, appears that another village has got involved in it. And that, of course, provides an opportunity for some of the investigation that needs to take place archaeologically to be carried out, and for much more to be done than is the bare legal minimum or the bare minimum that can possibly be imposed on planners. Individual investigations within areas of village infill can actually be part of much wider projects where people might be doing tested excavations in their garden, even though they're not going to build there, and that will be able to show how these efforts have developed in the past and provide a context, a bigger picture for our understanding of the individual place that's been excavated. Future approaches, I think, will be many and varied. Increasingly, we'll be looking at a landscape scale inquiry, so looking for settlements within the wider landscape, interdisciplinarity, different techniques used, different ideas used, drawing from different disciplines. Digital humanities, big data, computer processing for connecting people, for drawing people into projects, for helping people to contribute knowledge, and also, of course, for processing data and for archiving, which is going to be an important enabling tool for the future. And that links it to mass participation, citizen research. We really can join up people and places and the past within the planning process to ensure that what we have from the past in our landscape is preserved for the future. And then there's the question of instrumentalising the inquiry, this joining up, this involving wider publics in the investigative settlements today can actually confer a wide range of benefits in terms of developing skills, a sense of well-being, a sense of connectedness, relationships within the community. So there's potentially really a win-win situation from this. Research questions are many and various. I'll put these up on the screen just so they're sitting there. And it's really all about how can we maximise the amount of knowledge we can get, the amount of people who share that knowledge we have created, and help improve the settlements we live in for the future. There's so much more that we can do than we have done with a narrow planning process. If we have a sort of citizen army of people engaging in addressing those issues of the need for settlements to expand in the future. So what we can see from this when we're looking at connecting archaeology, commercial excavation, and communities, it is a bit of a scale where in person we can see that tests are being carried out by young people, developing skills, and many of the community investment industries, but we're actually quite like where the urban settlement is within this community at least, what their plans are, which will help plan to develop in the future, should there be a need for it. So a few thoughts for you to think about. Thank you very much for listening.
Into like
Of
end of involving archaeology in economic development, and that's what happens after we've left the site and we've left the local people and we've developed, and what happens to the results of that. So as archaeologists, we excavate a site for research or for rescue, and we produce a record of that site, which is compiled into the archive, as well as we produce a report or we write a book on the findings of our own work. We retain the intellectual rights to what we've written, to our interpretation, and we hope that people read it, possibly the local community, possibly the people that we've apparently done this work for. But what about the actual record of that site that we produce, the archive, the thing that we were meant to be doing in the first place? What are our hopes for that? And I do wonder how many archaeologists actually think about the longevity of what happens to that and the sustainability of what they've created. For the large part, as archaeologists, we are the keepers of the archives we produce. We've passed them on to museums for care and conservation, and therefore they've often moved out of our consciousness. We assume that the museums will follow on from our supposed guidelines of preserving the archaeology for the public. We assume that they will curate them, disseminate them, make use of them for display, teaching or research, and they'll facilitate public access to them because that's who we created them for. But recent research suggests this isn't really happening. Museums across Europe are reporting a space crisis, and many of them have closed their doors to all new archaeological archives, which means that they are now being stored in units, in sheds, in basements, and they're where they are inaccessible and generally unlooked after. And so my question would therefore be, as part of this process of economic development, what are we actually creating this record for if it is largely inaccessible and unused? So the storage crisis is now considered to be a major problem across much of Europe, and many museums are actually questioning the curation of this really expensive resource against their value in the present. So the discussions about archaeological archives and sustainability have generally been instigated not by archaeologists but actually by the museums who look after them. The various attempts to address this crisis have involved things such as selecting only parts of the archive to come into a museum, looking at ways of only taking in whole archives and actually rejecting complete other archives, so there is no home for them whatsoever. One museum has simply thrown a load of stuff out that they don't want anymore in the UK. Another one plans to dig a big hole in its car park and bury it all so someone can dig it up again in the future if they really want to look at it. This has obviously caused quite a few problems, and there have been quite a few rifts between archaeologists and museums, and I think it's brought to light quite a lot of the different approaches that the various archaeologists have across Europe. And there doesn't seem to be an agreement about who should actually be really making the decisions about what we do in the long term. Many archaeologists respond angrily to the suggestions of selecting material. Many archaeologists think that everything that comes out of the ground or everything they record on a contact sheet or everything they digitise should be stored. And a lot of the big bodies have actually put out big policy statements saying that we shouldn't be throwing away anything, we should be keeping everything for posterity. But there seems to be a fundamental misunderstanding between archaeologists and the people that we are expecting to look after our data. Many archaeologists think that museums are trying to cherry pick and treasure hunt in amongst the archaeological record, only wanting to keep the best of that record and not actually look at the bigger picture. Whereas archaeologists, we tend to understand that the large volumes of data have importance for the future. We can re-analyse, we can re-look at the large volumes of pottery and think, what does this mean, what can it tell us? Whereas museums don't really see the value in those large assemblages. They like the shiny things, the things that are displayed, because that's how they get their visitor figures up and that's how they get their revenue. I think this disconnect is further exemplified by the commercial archaeologists' response to museums increasing their charging structure. A lot of museums in the UK have said, we can't afford this anymore. For every box we take in, we're going to really ramp up the charge. This has gone from the past 10 years to be nothing to maybe £20. Some museums are now charging over £600 per box of archive that they take into a store, which, as you can imagine, as part of a development-funded project, means that no one can ever afford to put their archive in a proper repository, and therefore what happens to it would be my question. So, several archaeological units have actually suggested that even with this increased deposition fee, it's still cheaper for them to just foist everything off on a museum than actually think about the value of what they're choosing to retain for the public. They don't open anything out to consultation. Once the public involvement stops, say you've done a community training dig and the community have been involved, once that's over, very few people actually consult about what is recorded for posterity, for that community. No one really involves them in that. There have been many attempts to try and control this situation by bodies in the UK and across Europe, and there are many guidelines. We have a national set of guidelines on archiving in the UK, which has been succeeded by a European-wide standard, which came out 2 years ago, which should dictate every single archaeological project that happens in the whole of Europe and how it is recorded and stored and looked after. This has now been superseded by an international standard, which mainly came out because many universities go into foreign countries, excavate, take the records of that excavation away from the country in which it was originated, and the records never go back to the country, and therefore it's completely removed from its location of where it originally happened. And so these standards have come in to try and prevent that. However, working in the sector for a long time, I don't know many people who are aware of these standards even exist, let alone follow them. So I do wonder what the standards actually achieve. They don't actually solve the problem of the overflowing storerooms, of the lack of curation, the lack of reuse, the lack of the fact that archaeologists just seem to dump stuff and then walk away. Very few ever go back and say, what is this stuff we're storing? So I'm not sure of the point of all these standards if they don't address the problems. And I don't think that we've ever considered that all of this evidence should be retained. And I do wonder who we should be asking. Should it always be the archaeologists who make the decisions about the retention, or should we actually be more involving of the communities from where these archives originated and for whom they're meant to be representing? And I do think that this shouldn't be something that's left till the very end of a project. We should actually start from the beginning of the project and say, what is it we want to retain from every single project we do? So that's my discussion.
Yes, yeah. Although I don't think there's too much going on, and I think we may have to just abandon it. Nice idea, but in practice. To be fair, we have a number of around the table. I think my original concern was that I would literally be stuck in the room in Spain by myself. So I enjoy my people, and we can certainly communicate with the others. So I'll leave that up. Right. Communities or trying to involve archaeology as part of economic development. Now, Cornelia, with your particular project, did you feel that the archaeology, you mentioned that the village, they felt a sense of what was there before and they wanted to preserve it. Did the archaeology actually feed into the future? As Corinza was talking about the future settlements, or was it more about preserving?
I'm not sure actually. I think that it's more about preserving. They were interested really in actually and preserving, as well as this content that they had about knowledge. So this kind of cooperation for them was so important. This social issues that were connected to that, and the factor that they actually could cooperate with people from like and then. that they looked like in the historic era or in the Roman era. So that's why this is that the archaeological site actually influences the whole village in a way that actually means spatial development as well. But and the way that they actually want their village to be and to look like. So this is the thing. But I wouldn't say that it was the spatial development. The spatial development was the main reason for them actually to do.
But it's changing how they see their village and how they present their village.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's part of the village. I'm going to say that there is a whole village that is willing to do the houses like that because they are like also very modern ones. But part of the village really wants to live in heritage, so they actually wanted to make it. And as far as I know, there was some proposition to make the, a big farm for chickens. And they said that they won't do it because they have a different way of developing their village, and they want to do it in a way that this is connected to heritage, to cultural heritage, not to the like, farming and agriculture.
I think, and forgive me, I was filming you and trying, it was going in.
It seems to me that there's also been a financial incentive.
Yeah.
For them wanting to do it. You said other villages actually have gone out and asked archaeologists to come in, is that right?
Yes,
yeah.
It's not the, this village.
No,
in the village which is 10 kilometres away from Castlehead, when they looked at Castlehead, they thought that maybe they will have the same archaeological site near, so they will do the same because when they actually saw what's happening there and the impact on tourism and how the village is developing right now. They actually thought that maybe they will find the same archaeological site and they will do the same and it will actually develop their region in a similar way.
And it's interesting because it's exactly what Karenza was saying as well, where they have these small community projects and they're in these small villages but they're adjacent to each other. And basically one village, you know, there's always the one that's the first to go, and then after that it encourages the rest of them. And they want to find out more, and in their case they wanted to know how was the spaces used in the past. And certainly it's fed into Karenza's research. So I've worked with her in Norfolk, for example, where they were looking at the extent of, say, the medieval spatial planning and how the distribution of finds was helping them to understand the extent of the earlier settlements. But I think in your case as well, it was interesting. There's obviously this financial side or this potential for development of making it a destination, I think. And you mentioned, I was thinking really about infrastructure. So if you create some kind of attraction for people to come to, it can then have a knock-on effect for putting in, I guess, development proposals for better infrastructure to get people there.
Yeah, because the local authorities, for example, made a new road for them because they knew that the village has great museum that people are coming, also tourists from Holland and other countries are coming there, so they actually invest in the road there, which is also very important for the people. And when I was in the agriculture, in hotels which are 40 kilometers or 100 kilometers from us home, at the reception I always got a flyer with information about us, and that they can come there, and there is a very interesting museum, and it is visible that this village has actually had an impact on the whole region and even on the whole province. That was very interesting for me as well. And the great archaeological projects which are done right now there, which are they have money from Switzerland, for example, with 5 million euro just for developing the region, and just because of the archaeological site that they have, the Maslow Institute, because they applied for that applied for that due to the history and preservation of their lost history, and they made its lost trail and stuff like that. So this was the most important part actually for the project application. So they do like very
having similar projects where basically archaeology is being discovered, people have come in and then they've taken that on so that the archaeology has actually influenced the development that then takes place afterwards. Because I think we're all used to archaeology being undertaken ahead of development. So essentially we come in, we take the archaeology out, and then the development carries on. And there's no connection necessarily between what was there in the past and what is there in the future. I mean, we've certainly found this in the UK, where they will put up new, nice shiny new buildings, but they don't necessarily respect what was there in the past or even communicate what was there. And I'm just wondering, has anybody got any examples where actually the archaeology has influenced what, you know, the new place that's been created? So you've got this idea of placemaking.
Just a little example, in Tuscany, in Italy, in an area 20 kilometers north from Pisa, it's an archaeological site. It was a Roman villa of the 7th century, 1st century AD. And with a Pars Rustica and a little Manzio connected the two. In 2005 or 2004, not remember, then 6.
In a small community of with And rather a lot of tourists, because we during this commission we decided to make a periodical appointment every week, every Friday, with the opening day of the excavation. So very slowly
they didn't like the archaeology to begin with.
It destroyed
the school. Yeah. But when they came round to it, they kind of chose a specific area of the archaeology to look after. Whereas as archaeologists, it's not necessarily what we would choose as the you know what I mean, to remember from the archaeology, but they chose what worked for them.
As the beginning of this there were some ruins, no, of the villa with a very old, small near Sikira, where there was the school. The school was closed from
the 80s.
So 20 years. Yeah. And it was not possible to transform the building because it's too old and too damaged. And but they the municipality not share this decision and when we opened the museum in 27, the first part of the museum, we had
the local community demonstrate against the archaeology.
Yes, with
the extraction from the school.
It sounds to me like that's because of their memories of the school. You were changing their memories.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you see what I mean? It seemed to me that that was one of their problems, was their memory of what had been, maybe.
They had also a memory of the ancient villa, because many of the artists that now are in Massaciuccoli were built over the ancient ruin. So when the people that actually live in Massaciuccoli were young, they were used to play among the ruins and to use the mosaic for playing and so on. So they have also a memory of the ancient villa, but it was their memory, and it was not the memory of the archaeologists. So it was a long, very long process to create a balance between their memory and the archaeologist's memory, and to create a new development of the area.
Does anyone else have any other experiences of how archaeology has influenced an area, if it has, or if it hasn't?
Ivan? I have been more thinking in global facts, no? Attached to the Spanish case on how the villas or small or rural communities, sometimes we cannot consider them communities. So I think in the Spanish case, different archaeological projects that have been involving different agents from the communities has not been related to empower this community or make projects that attach different parts of heritage with a specific sector of the community. Sometimes they were more like working plans when they tried to reduce the amount of, so many cases, women that had not access to work in the rural life or were more disattached of the agricultural sector. And I have been working with so many women in different archaeological excavations, but never feeling like we were doing kind of participative archaeology or community archaeology, because finally they were workers. In other cases, maybe private enterprises of archaeology will have never chosen these women. That's why they were involving different majors and communities, because they prefer to choose men. Other projects that I have studied in the Spanish frame also started focusing on public archaeology or community archaeology, but also having in account these plans or making different volunteers, but from different villages. But these projects, I think, in the end, were kind of perverted, because finally, who arrived to these archaeological sites were volunteers from different universities. So sometimes, I think in our case, what started as a very more real participative archaeology process with community, when it became famous or more visible, they had to create kind of foundations in order to ask for more fundings. I think for our case, this is a problem. How to access to fundings to develop these rural projects? because you need to create a legal figure that in the end prepared the initial sense of this participative process in a Spanish case. We don't have any kind of heritage lottery foundation that give us more ownership to develop these processes. And endly, we need to connect with the public powers. And finally, in that sense, they drive finally the decisions to there. So I wasn't thinking in concise cases because I entered so late in this discussion because I didn't know that I was going to be attending this until the last very moment. And I'm sorry. So that's why regarding the examples that we were thinking, I was thinking in this transversal matters, and especially I think about this access to fundings are key. It's a key to change, I think, in the Spanish frame, the way of this the way how this process could be developed. Like these two dimensions of sustainability. From one side, the economic sustainability, but on the other side, the bottom-up sustainability that I think is really, really damaged when we arrive to the economical sustainability for this kind of process. Debate.
Well, you're talking about participation. I mean, obviously, we have various working groups and there's going to be themes that go across both, but the participation side of things and the fact that when archaeology is undertaken as part of spatial planning, you often get, you know, the viewing platform over the site where they're kind of out of context. You can see that they're digging something up. What are they doing? And sometimes there are, you know, we have outreach, we have public outreach where they'll have open days and they may be run for a few weeks. But for us, we think that's quite, it's fleeting. It's very short term.
For sure.
Yeah.
And once again, and it draws in with the archive as well, we've gone to the trouble of recording these sites, looking what was there before, but then when the developers come in, it's how do we ask them to at least indicate what was there before and not just do it in a short term, but actually make that connection long term. Because we talked about Santiago and the fact that you have that one layer of history that's here, so the kind of stone city. We know there's other layers there, but it's just they're not that apparent. And I guess what I want to ask people is how do we really use these excavations? And you mentioned funding is obviously a big problem. So how do we actually get that written into these schemes of investigation where it's not just public outreach, but how does it actually draw upon the past to create new spaces? And I think very much Carenza Lewis mentioned about the housing estates in Britain, where they went from very tight-knit communities and very close housing, so what we call back-to-back housing, very, very dense housing. And they thought, oh, well, we can take this model, and instead of having it sprawling, we'll just go up. So you have the high-rise apartments, but by taking that space and going up instead of along, they lost those community connections. And this is what she was talking about, open spaces and what people were doing with it and how it changes how people interact. And really, it's that historical development. So it's not necessarily always archaeology, but I think Cornelia and with the gardens, you know, it's a social side of, it's taking what was there in the past and it's giving them these kind of social spaces. And I guess, I don't know, but did it create a community around they were creating these gardens? I'm guessing that they would be exchanging ideas, talking to each other, or was it?
Giving the ideas to other villages because they are afraid that market, so the only one in the restaurant, so that's why this is also for that they are famous. So this can be also a matter of great discussion between how to actually cooperate with each other. And for me, what struck me actually was that from the actually the field of Brazil made this museum and it influenced like village and the lives of people in a great way, but still in Sofia there is this visible tower which has huge archaeological studies made of. So, and it has like no influence on no one, and because archaeologists were not willing to actually cooperate with community. So this is also a striking example of how actually archaeologists can work with people and what actually it can bring about.
I think it's important because, again, we mentioned this, the idea of fossilising archaeology. So I guess even for myself in the past, I've thought, well, you can preserve things in situ, so you can just have a little bit of wall where it's exposed, you know, as we have in various bits of London and various other historic cities across Europe, where you have little bits, and sometimes it's interpreted or well, you know, it's well incorporated, other times it's just literally, it's there, and people don't necessarily know what it is, how it relates to the past, it's just literally, it's left there. And that's considered that it's still contributing to the new place, but with this little bit of wall. But as we saw with, I don't know if anyone else went in there, but the part of the historic wall of Santiago that's actually exposed, so you can see through a glass floor, and there's a little bit there. You know, that's not necessarily contributing to what's there now, it's just literally, it's disconnected, and I think this is what I'm really interested in with archaeology and placemaking, because it's become such a massive buzzword for spatial planning that archaeology is now contributing to spaces, but I'm not so sure. I think we're doing ourselves a great disservice because we are disconnecting it. We're not necessarily connecting it to the, you know, the present and the future. We're not necessarily connecting it back. It's just kind of sitting there.
I wonder if we can think of any ways that we could keep stuff going. That's actually a really good example of how people have continued with the themes that have come through, but I don't think that normally happens. I think quite often with archaeology, we go in through planning needs, we dig a site, we might have an open day, like Sarah says, you know, like everyone comes and stares at us and they like it if we've got some bodies, and then they go away, and then we go away, and that's pretty much it. Even if a bit of wall's left up, that's not really, to my mind, what have we actually contributed to that place? Yeah, some school children had a nice day out for the afternoon and saw some archaeologists, but has that really contributed to that place? And I do wonder if we've, as archaeologists, have we actually considered properly what that means, contributing to the place that we're working? And I don't quite know, I did a big site in this place called Cambridgeshire, it's out in the east of England. And it's really big development, and it's this little tiny village was basically becoming this huge town, and so this tiny village had just been encroached on all sides, turning into this huge town, and they genuinely weren't happy about it, but they didn't get a choice. And so you don't want to annoy the people that you're living and working by, so you invite them for open days and you invite them along, and generally they weren't interested in the site until we found a Saxon cemetery. When we found the Saxon cemetery, suddenly it was extremely exciting because the next village along had a Saxon cemetery and they didn't have one, and now suddenly they had their own, and so that became their focal point. And so the rest of it, bear in mind that the digs were there for 15 years, people were excavating. The one and only thing that that village took on and owned and said, we want to consider this, they put up pictures, they've got information boards in the village, was the fact that they had a Saxon cemetery, which as far as they meant that theirs, I think we dated theirs, was older than the next villages along. So they were like, you know, they could turn around and say, you know, our Saxon cemetery is older than your Saxon cemetery, and they were really proud of it. And I just feel like if that was the one thing that they were cared about for their village, that's the only thing they really wanted to take forward and own as a community, and yet the previous 15 years worth of excavations that had revealed I don't know, the entire history of the region, you know, from the Mesolithic all the way through to how their village had developed. They weren't really interested in it. It didn't influence them, it didn't have any effect on what they did. It didn't, especially didn't have any effect on spatial planning, because that town that was being built regardless of what was found in the ground. So, you know, I'm not really sure what influence archaeology had in that case, apart from them being able to brag at the next council meeting. Do you see what I mean? So it's like, in that case, if we're doing 15 years worth of excavations, what influence has that really had on that community? Has anyone else felt like, you know, had any experiences like that?
Skills and then we're able to go on and take that up as an occupation. So I think what we will talk about later is certainly how there's different routes into becoming an archaeologist, and obviously these community schemes are one way of doing that. I think we've had some questions from our slightly silent, but they're talking amongst themselves online, which is quite funny. But they would like to, I think they were asking Sam, in terms of archives again, how can we bring that back to spatial planning? Placemaking.
Yeah, but with coming back to the fact of the multi-layer spaces, you know, on the local communities, I think it's harder, much more than the city. Firstly, I think because on these communities they were a big fright, you know, frightened. They were frightened for expropriations. So, and for the Spanish case, I think on the small villages you can find private properties. There's sometimes small housings. With a part of land for the previous activities that they did at home. So it doesn't exist on different layers with archaeological, because there have never been, for the last maybe 200 years, interested in showing up these layers on archaeological remains, treated as archaeological, because you can also think about more contemporary vision of archaeology in vertical, of course, and you can find these layers. That depends where is the end of this thin line, I think, between what are we considering that would be archaeology for the community and for enhancement and for helping. But I think that the expropriation fact in this part of the social organization has been determinant for this lack of multi-layer spaces in these areas. And also because of the looting that has been always so even higher, much more higher than in the cities, no, that the fact of the looting, I think, has been also that we need to consider when we are thinking about sustainable and spatial dimension and planning, because I think it's important to debate here.
Yeah.
So UK perspective, because so many people put that examples, and
we
doesn't even have one map of disadvantages, no, like to say in Spain, which area should be better, where are the most vulnerable local communities. We don't have any kind of a study like in Poland that you have Poland A or Poland B. We just say here, oh, local communities, yeah, they are a little bit under development. Everybody is continuously migrating to the cities.
And that's it, yeah.
Yeah, how are we going to plan in advance? This kind of, we didn't even have the tools for doing it well previously on my country. I mean, but let's get ideas, how
we plan for stuff that isn't being done. Yes. I think just, yeah, we have, there's a few questions about if anyone had any views on the stuff I brought up about what we retain for the future and how we retain it and how our records as archaeologists fit within generally the economic planning system where we produce archaeological records because something's going to be built or knocked down or whatever it is. And how does that fit? Because my current feeling at the moment is that as archaeologists in general, not everyone, but in general, the longevity and what we really want to retain, we haven't really considered, we haven't really thought about the masses of information and knowledge we're creating, who we're creating it for, why we're creating it, and how that actually reflects back to the places where it came. Because I think quite often we go in and we dig, or a university might do it in a completely different country. They go into another country, do an excavation, and then they take all the records away with them. And how is that therefore helping out with the creation of a place if the records are completely gone? Even if the records go back to the local museum, if they're not properly organised or documented, or they're not made accessible, they're still not supporting that place or helping out the place from which they came. And I wondered if anyone had considered that or had any thoughts on what they do with their own records and how they've considered will happen to them in the future.
Has anybody been part of an academic excavation where that's happened, actually? We've been asked this, how many of us are archaeologists? Not that that matters, because lots of people get involved with archaeology and that's a good thing, but how many of us are archaeologists here?
Who physically go out in the field. So we all should be creating data, okay. Basically. So in that case, what my question would be is, how do you deal with it? What do you think about it? And have you actually considered all these issues that museums are literally turning around and saying, we've had enough, you know? You dumped stuff on us and you never asked us in the first place if we wanted it, which is what they are now saying in the UK and in a lot of the big cities across Europe. I wonder if anyone had thought about that.
Well, I'm going to go to the opposite problem right now with the data and actually excavations, what to do after excavations with all the artifacts that we actually have and with the apples and stuff like that. Museums actually obliged to take artifacts possibly on water because they always say that they don't have any space for that.
Yes.
And it was also not that. For example, they said to archaeologists that we can take it to our university and just make our own places and keep it in our own buildings. And it happens mostly, but it's actually it's the law. It's just beyond the law. It's not the law actually. In Poland, artifacts may be stored only by museums, not by the universities or something.
Okay.
So it's forbidden to do that, but everybody knows it because we know that museums are they don't have money to actually have bigger spaces, and that's why they are just living in such a way. But often, because professionally I do excavations on the Second World War, and this is different thing in Poland because most of the artifacts that we have, they are not perceived as artifacts, they are just rubbish for people that are actually from the museums mostly and for other archaeologists and stuff like that. So we often cooperate with local little museums or local associations that have their own private museums, and actually we interested and nobody is willing to study it, and it's just like gathering the material that doesn't matter to anybody after excavations. This is also a problem for us.
We had a really interesting conversation at dinner yesterday with Gavin McGregor, who's obviously working with Cornelius Holzhoff. And I was slightly shocked at first because I work in the Lake District National Park, and we have the Langdale Neolithic Axe Factory, and you have a lot of debitage from that. And essentially he has boxes and boxes full of it, and it was going to be thrown away, so he kept it. And he's thinking that in the long term he wants to do an arts project along the lines of it. And I was thinking, okay, how do we feel about that? Because sometimes the pottery shows, and pop's not my favourite thing, I'll thoroughly admit to that, but some of these, you know, undiagnostic or these, you know, the bulk finds that we get, people can do quite inventive things with it, which could then relate back to place, especially if you can incorporate them in a way. I mean, I'm thinking, I used to live in Norfolk, and the fact is that there's flint there, flint nodules, and the buildings are made out of the flint nodules, and that it helps to give you an idea of the place, and you know that you're in Norfolk, you know, straight away, because you see these buildings made out of these flint cobbles. And it's just, you know, how do people feel about that? Because I think Sam's alluded to this, we're very precious about our archaeological archives, but then again, they can be an economic burden to some of these museums. And, you know, we don't like the idea of disposal, but then again, do we like the idea of recycling and using it as a material?
In the UK, archaeologists, if you ask them en masse, if you ask them, can we get rid of stuff? Can we be selective about what we retain for the future? Generally, they're really negative. They want to keep everything. They say, why am I digging it up if you're going to throw it away? But my point is, but you are effectively throwing it away anyway. You are putting it in a box in a museum store to go mouldy, or you're leaving it in a shed because no one can get to it. Or whatever it is, I feel like it's disposals by neglect is basically what's happening at the moment. So I feel like, can we think about this differently? Are there other ways that we can say the results of our work can better serve the communities they come from? Be that roadfill for the potholes down in the local village, or can we think more creatively about art projects, about getting children involved in using some of the stuff, about, I don't know, sensory experiences for community groups where they require it. But the current situation as it stands, I know in the UK and it sounds like in Poland, it's not academically viable. We're not supporting the archaeological record, because we're not, but we're also not supporting future knowledge or even just interested local people by what we're doing. So it feels to me like we need to kind of rethink our approach to the records that we create through archaeology and what it is we want to recreate, and also why we're creating it, literally from the first point, why are we creating this? Because it seems to me that we haven't really answered that question yet. That's the way I feel anyway. I don't know if anyone else feels differently, if they feel that actually it's all precious and we should be keeping it all. I don't know.
It's all precious.
Yeah.
In the last few years, I was collaborating in the summer. The village has an illegal museum.
Oh, yeah.
They have their own illegal, completely illegal museum. There is announcers in the entrance of the village, archaeological museum, and they have all the different artifacts that all the surroundings of the village that the people, shepherds were finding a long, long time ago. And it's not so bad, you know, the musealization panels are more or less okay, and they didn't. So when we started and more people were doing different archaeological works in that village, because I don't know why this summer there were three different archaeological excavations over there. It's a very big, I don't know, the village itself is very small, but the legal
class,
thank you. So it's super wide. So they were asking us, why the artifacts that you are extracting now are not going to go to our museum? Oh, well, your museum is completely illegal. We really liked that museum, and we were thinking about how to become that museum legal. Because, I mean, all the artifacts that were there has no context at all.
So the unique the purpose or the last part of the life of these artifacts are going to be a just to compare the new artifacts that we are. Why not to try to build up the legal framework for this museum? But then we find there's no way to find fundings for an illegal museum.
Yeah.
So then it starts, and that's the end of that.
But my question was...
But we were doing workshops with the children of the village in the illegal museum, for sure. And we try to engage with the people, with the children from the community, but we were digging in the summer. So in the summer, the lot of children were at the beach, and the sun with their grandparents, and we only had children that were with the grandparents that live in that village, but they are completely detached of that community in the sense of that. So it was interesting, no, in that sense. So what children are we engaging during our campaigns? Because usually our campaigns in Spain are during the summer, for example, no, but the fact of this gathering information and we were collecting so many data that we were showing to the community. The people were interested in going also to the archaeological site. But I can say that the workshop with the children was completely horrible. I think one day only came one child and the other day three. So we didn't arrive to this engagement, really, just because of going there 2 months. I think it should be processes that are more visible during the entire year, not only for the archaeological campaigns, for sure.
And in that, for example, we cannot choose to discard part of the culture, but we are blind to keep the memory. So we have no possibility to destroy or to put under the soil part of the boccia, part of the fine, but the Italian law obliged us to preserve everything, tiles, bricks, everything. We spend a lot of money for warehouse, for keeping boccia.
Yeah.
Every kind of fine metal, as you said before, is totally destroyed for the community because in abandoned warehouse, findings cannot talk to us anymore. So this is a problem. On the other hand, unfortunately, in Italy, we as archaeologists are rarely involved in the decision plan. We are not involved in the special planning of community or of the human center. The land management is made by the local authority, by the municipality, maybe by architects, engineers, whatever, but rarely by the archaeologists.
Yeah.
It is one problem in Italy. The other one is that a lot of time when archaeologists plan to make an excavation, do not plan how to involve the local community. They go there, they make the excavation. And the perception of the place is like a dead place, a place where nowhere lives, nowhere is the owner of the land or a memory related to the piece of land. And it is another important issue because we are not used in Italy to be involved at every level in the decision-making process. So our interventions are in many cases spot intervention or research intervention that can leave ruins or nothing, maybe one conference to the local community and no more. I think that we have to change our perspective. For example, we need to participate at the special planning part of the decision-making process, because we can really understand where an area is more useful to be preserved or not, and we are able to decide to make an excavation in an area because maybe it's a very valuable area and we can be able to involve the local community. Because when we speak about local community, in many cases we speak about rural area, but also in the urban area, there are, especially in the great town or in the surrounding of town in Italy, there are problems that are really similar to the rural area. With another issue, that is the one that people in town are coming from different places and they haven't a common memory. And so maybe archaeology can give them a common memory, the memory of a place, the memory of ancient settlement that is part of that place, and that can be able to create a new memory of a local urban community that maybe is not so settled as the rural one, maybe change a lot during time, but have to create at least for a few or 10 years its memory.
But then they will build an interpretative center, that we have so many interpretative centers that sound like mushrooms. Finally, they're abandoned, generating also these feelings of rejection against the public powers that decide, oh, this area is going to be important for a period of time, we will invest in an interpretative center. There will be someone working there during the first year. Later, this person will go only for weekends, and then this person will go only for one weekend a month. So that's another fact, I think, about these interventions and the...
And the longevity of what you're actually creating, and actually, are you doing something that can be seen as negative in a few years' time that actually has the opposite effect of what you intended it to have?
Yeah, but in order to find solutions to these problems, maybe these kind of centres that they already exist should be refurbished or maybe re-empowered to be also these starting points for the special plans of that we are thinking here. Not it arrived to my mind when you were mentioning all this process, I was thinking, oh, great, public powers in the end, what do interpretive center? We already have a lot of them. They could start making more different, developing a different role in their actions and start being more creative in the sense of doing more things for spatial planning and involvement. That's a good idea. Yeah, good point for the future.
What is interesting about this session is to try to think I started to make more visible archaeology for land planning manners. At the end, this is the real problem, no? Because the law, community involvement, but archaeology is not for people, for the most of people. And I would like to propose, I don't know if you have a specific system of evaluation, your activity, your project in urban archaeology or land plan, and what is the role in the case of land plan of the archaeology? I don't know if I explained it. The idea for me is to try to develop, I think it's a good contribution, and as indicating what are the you describe the topic, the most important topic that we need to reflect, and we need to transform this in indicator that you can use in all your work, no? More than describe the problem, to try to look for a methodology to resolve the problem, no? Maybe that's my proposal, more proactive proposal, to look for what are the way to develop indicators to to improve the situation of the religion purity, especially in the case of economic development.
Right. Another problem that we see in Italy is the fact that the economic development is always seen in the tourist sector. We are not able to think of a kind, maybe there aren't, but we are not able to think of a kind of economic development created by archaeology. The only one is an archaeological area, a museum,
but maybe that's not our job. I know that sounds. I know archaeologists, we tend to take on many roles, so we become jacks of all trades, and we're expected to think through these issues of how do we. But really, we're archaeologists. We go there to do the archaeology. We need to talk to the people who maybe want to then carry these things forward. And I think it's very important what you're saying about the idea of more interpretive centres. I think we're overwhelmed.
Well, it's usually archaeologists who work there. But the ones I know, you know, it used to be some of the first works that people maybe just ended a degree and try to find a job, and then you end as a guide on an interpretive centre, doing lots of tasks that maybe are not related with archaeology for sure, more with museology or management.
It's also,
yeah.
It's what you were saying is. Sorry, can you remind me?
We archaeologists, so we should do our
yes. So you're saying about economic developments and, well, the potential for various, economic benefits associated with archaeology. I think I've come across places where they look at partnerships. So the archaeologists do the archaeology, and then someone comes in, like with the, I'm thinking of the hub, the way it was supposed to work, where you broker. Where you basically have people who come together and they talk about their side of things and then you connect them up. And maybe that's a better way instead of, say, the archaeologist pushing for, you know, what they think will be the best thing in terms of interpretation.
It has to fit with a lot of other people's ideas. It's not necessarily what we as archaeologists want.
No.
I know quite often the end result of the project, you go, that's not what I was intending, but there are often so many of the people involved that you can't always put the archaeology at the top of the pile, can you? So, does anyone have any final thoughts? Because I think it's tea break and we don't want people to miss their coffee before we come back, okay?
Yes.
Yeah.
Smoking
solo, somos aquí, somos solo reconvertidos a gente, hombre.